Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Leo Gavaza, and for today, we're going to get into a conversation that we've had from a number of different angles on this platform, and that is the car subscription market. We've spoken to a number of new and traditional players that have all seen the light and have decided that this is the space that they want to be in. But for myself, for today, we're going to be having a conversation with probably the business that first introduced me personally to car subscriptions, and that is Flex Club. I first interacted with them many years ago. I can't remember exactly when, but I'm just gonna call it five years ago. And there's been a lot of evolution during that time. And for today, we're hoping to catch up, get a sense of the strategy, get a sense of what the landscape is looking like for car subscription, and also just understand how the team is hoping to take the business forward. I'm joined by Tinashe, who is the CEO, joined by Howard, who is the CTO, and Idan, who is the COO, and we're going to just have that conversation. Gentlemen, greetings to you today.
Greetings, Madiwa. Great to be here.
Cool. I'm going to start with Tinashe, simply because it's been a while since we last had one of these types of sessions. Yes. Flex Club, car subscriptions. Back in the day, we understood it to be a hybrid between a long-term lease and a normal rental that many people are used to from the likes of Hertz, Europe Car, or Avis, right? In 2024, has the definition of a car subscription changed in any way?
No, it hasn't. I think, now, I guess a few years later, what we've seen is folks have tried different models, and there's a bit more data on what works, what doesn't. But as far as the utility or the value proposition for the customer is concerned, that's essentially the same. It exists on a spectrum of mobility, short term, long term. I think all players in the space just believe that there's an opportunity for something in the middle that unlocks more flexibility but doesn't erode or take away from the economic value of committing to a car longer term. I think we've just taken a very specific path informed by different forks in the road that we've encountered.
And right now, where do we stand in terms of the nature of your business as Flex Club? What does Flex Club look like?
Yes, our business has evolved quite substantially from the start. My background, always coming from a mobility foundation, specifically the ride hailing space. I saw an opportunity to unlock flexible access to vehicles for a different segment of the market. And over the few years, then discovered that, especially through COVID, I think it was around that time that we last spoke, that there was an opportunity to work with incumbent fleet operators or fleet owners to help them develop a product that could be launched into the consumer market, which saw significant traction. We had a different scope of responsibilities at the time. We've narrowed down that scope, really refined where we think our technology can be most impactful. And I think today, as it stands, I can confidently say we are clearly a technology business. Where in the past, I think we had to take on roles and responsibilities that extended outside of technology, which is not uncommon, especially building in Africa, because some of the infrastructure or the foundation you need doesn't exist. So you might find that an e-commerce business needs to also be a logistics business, which might not necessarily be the case in other parts of the world. So now I think it's great because, like you mentioned at the beginning, some of the traditional players, the incumbents, have also woken up to the idea that there's a lot more to be uncovered or explored here. And we could partner, we could collaborate, leveraging our technology foundation with their operational prowess to really scale a product in this space. Bearing in mind that this is all off the backdrop, subscriptions exist because I think most consumers, not just in South Africa, but around the world, just felt that the existing suite of products are inadequate to serve the needs of different types of customers. So take South Africa as an example. 70% of new car demand is effectively unmet because the product that dominates how a South African consumer gets a car is vehicle finance.
Yeah.
Vehicle finance, it's pretty widely known that vehicle finance only approves 30% of applicants, which means, to the point, 70% of people who want a new car can't get a new car. And folks have tried different things along the way to try address that. I think we're just now very intentional about not trying to do more than what is our strength, which is technology, and partner with those that take care of the other parts of the, let's call it the stack, to then build a modern, world-class experience for customers in the market for mobility.
One of the most interesting things that the Business Day app does, I just went and I checked now because I just had to confirm in my head, is that it tells you when something happened in order of months, right? So the last time that Tinashe was on this platform was 31 months ago, which translates to February 2022. Mm-hmm. All right. But funny enough, if you backtrack even more, it says that, the last time I think I properly covered Idan and his former business was 50 months ago, which was, I think, in the heart of COVID-19.
Yes.
Yeah. You had a business called Funder at the time.
That's great.
And I believe... I think when we were engaging at the time, there was a partnership around Telkom Yellow Pages and that type of thing that was happening. But things have since changed since yes. then. I'm very interested to understand how does everything that Tinashe has just said to us about, the vehicle market, unmet vehicle demand, 30%, rates of approval, all of that stuff. How does that come together with you? Because when we first, spoke to Flex Club, Tinashe had, his existing team at the time. You had a separate business and you were running Funder at the time. How did this marriage happen? Is it a marriage? Is it a partnership? Like, what's happening here?
Yeah, sure. So I think just stepping back, So around 2018, co-founded a business called Funder, right? It's in the finance space. So I think there's a lot of advantages coming from an outside into an industry. When I first started Funder, I wasn't in a finance space before. So coming in not from the industry allows you the ability to kind of look from the outside in and see how can we really kind of change things. So again, not coming from the mobility space, coming from the finance space allowed us to kind of really have a fresh look into the business. So taking a step back, yes, co-founded Funder in 2018. We landed up selling the business to Retail Capital, which is part of the Time Bank Group. Landed up staying and working at Time Bank for another, I think it was around 4 years. And then got approached from Tinashe, one of the investors in the business, to come and look at Flex Club. Now, what I really liked about Funder and what I really like about Flex Club is the financial inclusivity aspect of the business. I like industries that, like Tinashe was touching on, the 70% rejections. I mean, with Funder, we were doing SME lending. We saw the exact same problem, right? So a lot of small businesses trying to access capital, not being able to from the financial incumbents, i.e. the banks. So really come up with an alternative product driven by technology. And the same thing's happening in the mobility space. So when I first got approached with this business, kind of looking from the outside in, I saw a massive, massive need and a massive opportunity, right? Because like Tinashe was saying, a lot of people need access to cars, especially in South Africa, but the banks aren't approving them. Now, the product of suites in the market to service these needs, I mean, there's none, essentially. It's just vehicle finance, right? That's when someone wants to get a car, the first thing they think is, how do I buy it? How do I finance it? Now, you look overseas, and it's the same thing that I did with my first business. Look what's happening globally and look what's happening overseas. You see that the mindset has shifted from ownership into, like Tinashe was saying, a utility-based aspect for mobility. So people don't aspire to own cars anymore. It's become a usership economy. And what is happening in the country is currently in South Africa, there isn't much options for that. So when we got linked up together, looking at the industry, really kick things off with Tinashe. So you're talking about, is it a partnership or a marriage? I always think business is a marriage. It's actually harder to split up in a business than an actual marriage. So stepping into a business with someone, it's probably one of the biggest decisions you can make. But you know what? We were fortunate enough to hit it off, kind of be on the same wavelength. And I saw a lot of similarities in what Funda was doing to what FlexHub was doing. And I really believe that I could take a lot of learnings from my previous business, implement it into this business, and obviously leverage off Tinashe's, decades of experience in the mobility space. Because like I said, I don't know much about the mobility space, still learning, but fundamentals of business, financial inclusivity, and you know what we'll touch on a bit later in the podcast, the distribution piece of this business. I saw a ton of similarities. So for me, I always see an advantage being an outside coming in, because you can have such a fresh mindset of how to do things, and you don't understand and you don't know the limitations of a certain industry. So you just come in and start breaking things. And most of the time when you come in and start breaking things, you realize that they actually work. So coming in with that mindset, I'm really bullish on this industry, just like I was on my previous industry. I actually think there's more to be done here. It's been great. We've been together since the beginning of the year and going strong.
All right. Howard, your take on the, you're the CTO.
Yeah.
It's never an easy business because when I was growing up, my dad often used to say that the job of a CEO is to turn the dreams of shareholders into a reality, mm-hmm. right? And I feel like, the job of a CTO in a startup is, to make the most of very little most of the time. Sure. So talk to me about the evolution of the tech stack for a business like this, given everything that's spoken about. And I'm asking because I've always understood FlexClub to have, two sides. You've got an internal piece, but also at the same time, you've got a piece that can service, other clients. People can take this platform and use it, absolutely. for their own. And also at the same time, whilst you're talking, I guess your journey with FlexClub, we know where Tinashe has come from. We know where Idan has come from. How about yourself?
Yeah, so I've been in the tech space for the last decade, worked, across the spectrum. More recently, founded two of my own startups over the last 4 years. And toward the end of the last one, when we were kind of offloading that tech, Idan gave me a call and kind of introduced me to the concept of FlexClub. Idan and I go back. We were high school buddies. Our paths almost crossed during the Funda days. So we've kind of been in and around each other's lives for a long time. And he told me about FlexClub, and I was super, super, super excited. I think it's a great concept. And I think, to what Tinashe said, this really is a technology platform at the end of the day. It's a technology business. And being in that space and having experienced the startup world, I suppose that got me very excited. And I think what we've done to date has really, as you mentioned, on the one hand, we have a customer-facing platform that's quite innovative, a great experience, and we see a lot of customer delight, which is something that is great to see in the real world. And on the other side that people maybe don't see, working with a lot of our partners, both on the distribution side and on the supply side, we're doing a lot of exciting work in that space where we're having to modernize this industry, as we've touched on maybe from the financial perspective, that was somewhat archaic. But what you also don't realize is the systems that are built on are also archaic. So what the challenge for us is to look to elevate that arena into the modern world And I think that's what we've started to do, and you know, have a lot of big ideas about how to go about doing it. But that's what's, I think, so exciting about this business is, yeah, on the one hand, we have this beautiful customer experience delight element. And on the other, really kind of innovating in the industry that was kind of left behind in the past from a technological perspective.
All right. Just as a quick follow-up, because you are the, I'm just going to call it, the youngest person in the game here.
Yes.
Age-wise, I have no idea what's happening here. What do you make of, the team dynamics, you know, of Flex Club? Because leadership in startups is always a point of, you can make or break.
Sure.
The success of a business based on, you know, who you've brought together to make something like that happen.
I think that's probably one of our biggest strengths, to be honest. You know, Idan mentioned Tinashe's vast experience in the actual space, which is super helpful considering we're building in the space. And then you have Idan's success in the startup industry with the overlap of the financial world. And when you look to marry that, as we mentioned, we're building a tech platform. I think we've got the perfect mix of the right elements to build a successful startup here. So I'd for sure say that, yeah, kind of the dynamic's great between us all. And it's definitely one of our strengths.
All right. Tinashe, leadership, bro. Like to my point just now, one of the things that has been interesting for me, especially when you have certain businesses that you've been following for a while, especially in the startup space, you see the evolution, right? You've had an evolution in your team, right? Can you talk to us about that? Because that's not easy,
sure.
Right? You've almost got a completely different team.
Yes.
And also you're still sort of operating this Netherlands, South Africa type of structure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe just zooming out for a second and thinking about the arena of being in the startup world and the distinction between being a startup versus being a small business aspiring to become a bigger business is that by design, as a startup, so first of all, the product you define is, in most cases, undefined, hasn't been done before, which means that there are many unknowns. There are a few things that you can do to limit the uncertainty as you go down the journey. And I like to use the framing of the idea maze, you know, popularized by Andreessen Horowitz, Chris Dixon. Originally, you know, Balaji did Srinivasan did a lecture on this at Stanford. But the idea that there are many branches as you build out a product and there are many unknowns just means that it's a longer journey. It's not a linear journey. And I think I started this journey the better part of 5 years ago, already being a mobility, you know, operator, you know, previously at Uber and, you know, the 4 years that preceded that. And even still, there were things that had to be uncovered through trial and error. And I think the biggest realization I have is that as you go down those branches, there are different skill sets, different compositions as far as, you know, investors and capital providers are concerned, different compositions on team. And I think I just had to kind of come to terms with the fact that for the type of product that needed to be built after the lessons that were learned over the last 4 years, there was an opportunity to reconfigure that. You know, some of our shareholders also saw that without losing any conviction on the market.
Yeah.
I think how we just touched on the point that the market is massive. Someone needs to figure out this space, and it's unlikely to be someone that's been in the space for very long, because you can also get blinded by familiarity. And I think it's also important for me that there is a distinction between mobility and the automotive industry and the finance industry. You know, sometimes people conflate those. There definitely is an overlap. And yes, while difficult, I also went down this road with a pure commitment to trying to deliver value in this market, seeing that that value had yet to be unlocked. And fortunate to then get to this point where, you know, we bring together this specific combination of skills. And this year, we've seen incredible traction on that idea, now unlocking more and more value in the space. Maybe it doesn't directly answer the question, but just saying that a difficult process, but a necessary one, and one that is going to be continuous. You know, this will not be the last iteration that we need to make. Maybe not on team, maybe it's on capital, how we think about capital, how we think about product. And to the point on the difference between a startup and a small business is that there are unknowns. If I say I'm starting a clothing store, my product is pretty well defined. I just have to look at history. How are the clothing stores before me done? And maybe I might have, you know, some innovation I can bring, incremental innovation I can bring around to team. Where here, we're kind of navigating this fact that there is a market. The product is relatively unknown. We need to figure out a branch that works, which delivers the highest value, you know, to our shareholders, but also to the customer base, to the market, with a team that maybe is non-obvious. I mean, looking at the three of us, we're sort of a non-obvious combination. If we're an incumbent, we wouldn't have configured this team this way. And I think that's like how I said, it's a big part of our secret sauce. We're able to move incredibly fast, but still know that there are many, you know, dead ends. And I've encountered my fair share of dead ends over the last 5 years. This is very much an R&D project. But what we've learned, our IP now, I think is an incredible moat for us. You know, so people might be looking, or maybe someone in the audience is listening to this thinking, this sounds interesting. I should go start a car subscription business tomorrow. These guys are crushing it. It's super easy. I think we're going back to the concept of the idea maze. The easiest thing to do is to point to the entrance of the idea maze. But the years of blood, sweat, tears in going down this maze, it's difficult to extract that from an article, from talking to someone. We had to get the scars. And as much as they're painful, I regret many of them, they're necessary for us to have the IP we have to put us in a better position to actually win longer term.
All right. Let's talk about Let's talk about those scars. Right, those cars, how have they informed what the product looks like right now? I guess my question more directly is, what's making money now? And how are you making money now?
So I think the key thing, and I made the point earlier, is when you unpack the product in this space, it's made up of multiple layers in the stack. Each of those layers, maybe one way to think about this is, if you think about one big engine, there are many cogs in the engine. The more cogs you have inside an engine, the more points of failure you have. Yes. I think some of those cars are just realizing that as a technology business, there are some cogs we can add 10x value to, kind of, you know, draw from, you know, some of the ideology of a Y Combinator and a Paul Graham, is, can you make something 10x better through technology? If the answer is no, what are you doing? You're not actually building a startup. Maybe you're building a small business that can become a big business. I think I had to be in the arena, you know, to get punched in the face, realize, for example, fleet management. Is there something for me to do there? Fleet procurement, fleet disposal. So all of these things are necessary cogs in the stack of car subscriptions. You know, risk. Damage risk, and it's not just one risk. There's damage risk, there's credit risk. And I think this is a space that Idan understands incredibly well, specifically credit risk. Is even that is complex. And I think a lot of fintech businesses even have tried to demonstrate that they're building technology that allows them to be 10x better than a traditional underwriting model. Some of that has been proven to be false, especially in recent times. And maybe even becoming more and more commoditized in the era of AI. I think we have now, you know, zoned in on the fact that the industry incumbents they're constrained by legacy technology. And the space that we've chosen to move into is a space that, if you're a Google engineer or a Facebook engineer or someone that kind of comes out of the Silicon Valley mindset, you might think of the space as unsexy. But for us, we're cut from a different cloth. So South Africans, we like to rough and tumble with a bit more of a challenge. We don't shy away from a challenge. And I think thinking about you know, the comparison to, say, banking, a lot of banking systems are still built on COBOL. And that's why fintech, you know, kind of came about and was able to move faster than the banks, because it wasn't, we weren't constrained by COBOL. I think what we're seeing is, by analogy, mobility players that have been in the space for decades are stuck on their equivalent of COBOL. And we're saying, instead of trying to build a competing mobility business with all the cogs in the engine, how about we help them just build a bridge from the COBOL-like equivalent to what the modern consumer expects? Because I can guarantee every single executive of a major mobility business in the world wants to serve the modern consumer. But what the modern consumer doesn't appreciate when they're frustrated and complaining about the experience is that it's incredibly expensive to move away from that COBOL-like system. And I think what we're building every day is a wedge that, you know, entrenches us as a partner to those established mobility businesses to serve that consumer base or those consumer demands without needing to make a massive investment. Because even that's just, it's difficult for a CEO of a major mobility business to justify to their shareholders. I think with our new product, we're focusing on a few things. One, I think we alluded to the point that there was a big opportunity around rethinking distribution in this space. It was pretty well defined, but we definitely saw opportunities to borrow from other industries. And, you know, Dan mentioned the point as well. I think with his previous business, they did some very intelligent things around distribution and the tactics around that, that you can redefine the value chain and uncover a 10x in just addressable market by redefining distribution. I think we've done a lot there. The other piece is what Hai mentioned around the actual experience. How could we remove more and more friction, but still building on top of that, you know, COBOL-like, you know, platform? So being that bridge. Those are the two areas where we've invested deeply, is the distribution aspect of our technology. And I guess as far as experience is concerned, actually the billing aspect. We can unpack that a bit more, you know, because we've obviously now been a bit more public on the fact that we are, to some extent, going all in on pay-as-you-go. Again, I always draw from analogies. Through my journey, I love being a student of different models, how different models have evolved in navigating our idea maze, especially considering that there's so many dark spots. We either draw from history, we draw from our domain experience, we draw from analogy. I think it's now a much more obvious analogy to build on is this analogy to telco. What is our, what I think of as our Yebo Gogo moment? 1996, November, who comes to the market and not only transforms the way South Africans consume mobile telecoms, but the world? I firmly believe we actually are sitting on the cusp of a transformative moment like that in mobility. So we're all in on pay-as-you-go mobility. We think it fundamentally transforms the experience. It makes it, it removes a lot of the friction.
Can you define that, pay-as-you-go?
So, yeah, again, using that, you know, that comparison in the telco space, you know, prior you'd have only postpaid, a contract. If I as the network or provider need to deliver a contract to you and trust that you're going to pay me after a month of using the service or using the network, I need to know a bit more about you by design, right? So I need to know that you can afford this contract. You know, what's your history of actually affording things at this monthly quantum of spend? With pay-as-you-go, you remove the need to do that because someone is actually transferring value onto the network before they've actually consumed or used anything on the network. So it's de-risked the transaction. And I think what we saw here is with mobility, or at least what we questioned is, why can't you just top up your account, use the network, and when you don't want to use the network anymore, just stop topping up, your balance is depleted. I think as we started to ask that question, again, like this concept of us being students, we're not, and we say especially now more recently, is that we die when we start to talk about ourselves as experts. And I hope no one ever refers to us as experts. Like, we have to stay students forever, always asking these questions, thinking about things from first principles. So we started with the conversation around, okay, why can't you top up? Is there a network to begin with? It's like, well, actually, there are players like Avis, et cetera, you know, them being the largest in South Africa. But you look at all the major brands on incumbents, they effectively networks. Just to digress for a second, I had the privilege of being in San Francisco maybe 3 or 4 months ago and stepping into a driverless car. So Waymo's obviously, you know, made a lot more inroads on its self-driving project. And it clicked for me that this point around utility, we say it in a very nonchalant way, this is going to become a network. Very, very similar to how you think about, you know, cell phone towers or the masts and that infrastructure. And then these devices connecting to that, and people are using this network and they're paying for only what they use. When you start to unpack it like that, as a student, first principles, it starts to become more and more obvious that, wait a minute, this has to go this way. Why should a consumer or the end user own the underlying infrastructure? Imagine if I said to you, Mudiwa, it's fine. You can have your smartphone, but you need to chip in your share of the tower costs. You need to own the towers. It fundamentally changes access. And by extension, the billing, if it was like only contract, limits the access. Now pay as you go, you can top up. It de-risks for the underlying network operator. In our case, we've chosen to partner deeply with, you know, someone that you've had on the pod before, Avis and Budget, and Zeta as a group. I think there's an exciting development that, you know, we will now actually be leaning into there, is powering their own pay-as-you-go offering as a starting point. So I think those two areas are a space you can expect to hear more about from us, at least. And I think we're also making it very clear why we should never be compared to players who've chosen different branches. You know, players who've chosen to maybe compete more directly with an Avis and say, you know what, we're going to raise debt. We're going to have these assets on our balance sheet. We're going to figure out fleet procurement from the car manufacturer. We're going to manage these cars. We're going to dispose of these cars. And we've tried that. We've tried elements of that. You know, thankfully for us, maybe not at a big scale, to learn the lesson that actually was pulling us further and further away from being a technology business. I think like now it's clear what our identity is and that this team in this room is actually best placed to materialize that vision.
To make that happen. All right. Idan, can you translate everything that Tinashe has said for us? And when I ask translation, all I'm asking is let's just use a basic example. All right, I come onto the platform.
Sure.
All right. What is my journey? And sure. How has my obviously there's the pay as you go aspects that Tinashe is talking about, but just walk us through what is my journey, what is the flexibility I now have that I didn't have before.
Sure. So let's go a step back. Say postpaid. Okay, let's differentiate between prepaid, postpaid. So pay as you go and postpaid. So what happened before we essentially came out with this product was you go to a rental company, or essentially any type of product to allow you access into a car in the country is a postpaid product, meaning you get access to the car only 30 days or 31 days after you pay for it, meaning that if there's an exposure of those 30 to 31 days, there has to be some form of credit underwriting, meaning if you want to get access to a car, whether it be finance, rental, rent to own, whatever it may be, you need to upload 3 months bank statements, latest 3 pay slips, got to do a credit score, got to upload your ID, essentially credit underwriting, right? Now, that essentially scopes out a massive segment of the industry, meaning that people that have a thin credit file, meaning people that just started work, they might be great individuals, credit worthy, you know, got a great job, but they don't have the track record to get access into a financial product in the car space. They were scoped out, meaning the current car landscape scopes them out. They aren't able to get a car. retired individuals, gig economy workers. They don't have consistent cash flows. They don't have consistent salary. They can't get access to a car. So this whole postpaid segment of the market required credit underwriting, which overlooked a massive segment of the South African economy. Now, what we said is that this product doesn't actually have to be a postpaid product. You don't actually have to get credit underwriting because you can actually pay for it upfront. So like Tanasha was saying, we saw what, you know, the mobile network operators did in 1996. But creating a pay-as-you-go product means that you don't actually need to have any credit underwriting. Why? Because the customer pays upfront. If you pay for it, you can get access to the product. So the difference with, you know, other car, whether finance or rental products in the market, is that there has to be some form of credit underwriting, meaning you either have to upload documents, credit scores, have to have a credit card. What we said, actually, let's turn it on its head. Why don't customers pay upfront, top up their account? That way, they don't have to upload any documents. They don't have to only have a credit card. Now they can use check cards or whatever it may be at their disposal and allow instant access to the to cars. Now, Tanasha alluded to the fact that we don't have aspiration of owning our own cars, right? So obviously we approached our partners and we said, obviously using their cars to provide access to the South African consumer. So really unpacking what that is, to your point. So you come onto our platform, you choose a car, you say how long you want it for, where do you want to pick it up? And, you know, you can have all these add-ons. You can have an additional driver. You can have a baby seat if you want to. So you essentially create a mobility package around your needs, whether you're a small family, whether you're a bachelor, bachelorette, whatever it may be. And we give you one monthly fee. Now, we ask you to pay that upfront. So as soon as you apply online with us, we'll send you a payment link. Do you want to top up your account? That payment link, once you pay, essentially gives you 30 days and 3,000 kilometers for this car. Now, as you drive, your balance depletes. After 30 days, we ask you, do you want to top up your account again? Now, if you a rent-to-own, for example, or vehicle finance, you're locked in for 5, 6, 7 years, however long it may be. With us, because it's pay-as-you-go, because it's a prepaid product, it's month-to-month. So let's say you tell us, you can even come on our platform and say you want a car for 4 years, but it's still month-to-month, because if you don't top up your account the following month, you can't use the car.
Yeah.
The advantage with it as well is if you enter into like a credit commitment on any product in a car, if you can't pay, it affects your credit score negatively, right? Because you essentially now you've used the car for 30 days. Now you need to pay. You don't pay. There's a credit breach, right? With us, because it's pay as you go. If you come into financial problems, just give the car back because you've already paid for it, right? So you don't have to. You don't have to fulfill your obligation of using the car because you've already paid for it up front. So it creates that flexibility to say, you know what, like I'm either going to use the car like indefinitely and just keep on topping up my account every month, or to say, look, actually in winter, I don't really need a car. So give the car back. In summer, I want to upgrade. You can upgrade, downgrade, pause. Now you're going, let's say visiting, I don't know, you're going overseas or wherever it may be. You don't actually need to have your car sitting in your garage and paying for it. Just give the car back. Top up your account again when you come back, when you want to use it. So by moving from a postpaid to a prepaid, not only creates more accessibility around the product, meaning that now any South African with whatever car he or she wants, let's say, you know, cheapest car on our platforms around like 6,000 Rand. So if you have 6,000 Rand, doesn't matter if you're a 19-year-old or a 60-year-old, doesn't matter if you work in a bank or, you know, you're just an influencer, for example. If you've got 6,000 Rand, you're able to access a roadworthy, you know, brand new car for 30 days and 3,000 kilometers. So that financial inclusivity, you know, there's no product that includes everyone in the market on the same spectrum when it comes to cars. So that's why when we kind of drew those parallels from the mobile network operators, because essentially that's what happened, right? Previously, if you wanted to get a contract, you need to go through a credit underwriting process. You need to upload bank statements, pay slips. All of a sudden, they introduced prepaid, pay as you go. Now, anyone with 20 Rand in their pocket could all of a sudden start using their phones and dialing their loved ones. So we said, why can't the same thing come into the mobility space?
Okay. Makes sense. If I'm to draw on the telecoms analogy that we're using, I've personally never had a cell phone contract.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, never. Mm-hmm. My entire life, I've never had a cell phone contract. I think they're expensive. I think they're necessary. And I guess the prepaid model has just always worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
My ISP, in fact, I don't work for them. Cool ideas. I don't mind saying them. They got me because when I first came to Joburg, I had no money. I had no job, which means I couldn't provide any of these documents mm-hmm. for me to get a fiber contract. But they were the only operator, the only ISP, sorry, that allowed me to have an uncapped package, fiber and everything at my house month to month without getting into a 24-month contract, which was very, you know, very attractive. And I'm using that as a way, as a framework to understand, I guess, the rationale behind something like this. But the reason I also asked for you to translate what Tinashe had said is because there was a time that I visited Shenzhen, China in 2019. And I saw a very interesting phenomenon where if you just drive around certain parts of Shenzhen, you just see scooters lying around, right? Mm-hmm. And it's because it's a, what you call this, the pay-as-you-go model,
mm-hmm.
right? You go, you swipe your card, and your card gives you, I don't know, like 50 Ks or something like that. When you reach 50 Ks, this scooter physically just stops working. And if you don't have a mechanism to top, some people, obviously you have a mechanism to top up, you continue doing what you're doing. Whereas some people, wherever it stops, that's just where they decide to, you know, park the thing and then just, you know, continue with their life. And I guess I was trying to understand, is this the stage that we've reached now, you know, with cars? Would you shut down my car at 3,000 Ks? You know, that type of thing. Yeah, it was just as a way to try and understand, you know, to say that I come to the platform, you know, I get a Tiguan or something, a VW Tiguan, 3,000 Ks, 30 days. Obviously, it's only at the point where you said I'm paying up front. That's when I was like, oh, okay, cool. That's where the, what do you call this? That's where the penny dropped, and I was like, okay, cool. That's where the difference comes in. So far, what type of track record do we have with the model?
I think we've in terms of our own brand and the platform. Our own brand that is sitting on top of this technology platform was largely a project to demonstrate the potential of our technology. And that brand is growing at an incredibly fast pace, you know, more than 40% per month. Of course, this
these
is
are people in South Africa that are coming.
All South Africans, or at least all within the South African market. That has been a strong validator of the potential for not just our own brand, but any brand. And I think now we're starting to now move into the next gear, which is empower other brands to build their own, you know, pay-as-you-go mobility offering on top of our platform.
Did you have to tell customers that we now have pay-as-you-go? Because back in the day, you'd arrive on the Flex Club platform mm-hmm. and then you'd see the different terms and then you just take that and then, right? Is there something in someone's face screaming, pay-as-you-go?
Well, I mean, if any consumer goes to our website today, it's now clear that this is a pay-as-you-go proposition. You know, we didn't do a big song and dance to mention this transition. I think it's called a stealth mode R&D exercise to reframe, a lot of which was actually informed by feedback we got from customers. I think the initial insight around pay-as-you-go was from a customer saying, oh, this is like pay-as-you-go on my cell phone. And then we recognize that that's the best way to articulate the proposition. And again, so all goes back to this beginner's mindset, the student mindset. You know, we're constantly, I think the brand Flex Club also keeps us close to the consumer to understand how could we continue to elevate that experience and what could we do to make it a lot more intuitive and simpler. But as far as the distribution piece is concerned, how could we build technology that enables any brand to build on top of this. Again, drawing from, I think it's also quite timely because drawing from the telco space, a lot more brands in South Africa are now building their own MVNO. So it's clear that even in telco, you don't have to own the towers and run the network. What are they building their MVNO on top of? You know, so if a bank or an insurer in South Africa is building an MVNO, they're building on top of the incumbents, the MNOs we all know. They're not trying to challenge them. And I think that's another exciting evolution of our technology is helping, you know, other brands lean into this idea of building their own pay-as-you-go proposition, mobility proposition, without needing to, like Dan mentioned, own the fleet. We've almost abstracted the complexity of the other parts of the stack, you know, for them through this technology layer that has also now created a world-class experience for the customer. So as far as traction is concerned, the growth is there. We're now, like I mentioned, we're now supporting even Avis with their own pay-as-you-go proposition, you know, powered by our platform, which is, I guess you're the first to hear it, is imminent. And maybe at the time of publishing this podcast, that would have been made a lot more public, which we're very excited about. But beyond that, we have several other brands, established brands that South Africans know and love, that have already, you know, now leaned into partnering with us to start helping them develop their own pay-as-you-go mobility proposition.
Is there still space for what had been the typical subscription model for FlexClub? Does that still exist in this paradigm, or do you completely get rid of that?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think there's smaller tweaks that we've made. There's definitely still space for that sort of proposition in the market. To my earlier point, it's just a question around whether us as a technology business, whether our technology can 10x the value by taking on these other things. Like, for example, the older FlexClub was, you know, largely postpaid and took on the burden of underwriting. So we maybe tried to make that a bit slicker. So instead of you know, needing to go through any complex processes, you could just, for us to KYC, you take a selfie, upload your ID, and computer vision is matching that. I think what we discovered was there wasn't a 10x upside in doing some of those things. Maybe we use, quote unquote, I'll say open banking technology so that you don't have to upload the actual PDF bank statement. I think there's a space for someone to do that, almost like underwriting as a service, and really make postpaid a better experience. But for us and our strategy, as far as focus is concerned, I think we've identified the area where we think we're best placed to be the leader. And that will be pay as you go.
Pay as you go. So, all right. Yeah.
So I think to tie on that and what Tinashe was saying is that what you see, especially in the telcos, all these MVNOs, you see brands coming into the market with their own proposition, built on the incumbents. We see that in the finance space as well. I mean, embedded finance, you see a lot of non-financial companies start providing financial products on the rails of the banks or other fintechs in the market. But taking those parallels and those learnings hasn't been done in the mobility space. And we want to be the platform that enables any brand now to start offering mobility services to their customers. So like Tinashe was saying, like FlexClub is just a brand. You know, we always refer to it as a billboard for our actual technology platform.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're very proud to now be powering up with this platform, the likes of Avis. And, you know, we have other brands that are very, very interested and we, like, you know, going down the line with to power up them. So what Tinashe was alluding to earlier, I really do think, obviously I'm very biased, but I really do think that the more and more household brands that are going to be starting to offer these prepaid mobility products in the market, hopefully powered up by our technology, is just going to become like a well-known thing. Like, why actually finance a car? Why subscribe to a car on a postpaid basis? Where, like yourself, like now you do have the ability to go on a postpaid basis. You said you didn't have the ability at the beginning, but now you do. But you still choose a prepaid product. Why? Because it's just better. It's more flexible. You're more in control of your usage. And up until today, like it hasn't been done before, like in the mobility space. So we are going out with a proposition to any brand to be like, if you like this product, we can power it up for you. You can start offering your own, you know, prepaid pay-as-you-go car products, you know, underpinned by technology, which is something very different and hasn't been done. Even, you know, I look worldwide. It's something that hasn't been done. So we really are kind of like innovating in this space. Will it work? Will it not? I guess we'll see. But that's kind of like where our vision's going. So using FlexHub as a brand to kind of test things in the market, be super close to our customers, just by looking at the reviews and customer interactions, they love this product. Why? Because South Africans love pay-as-you-go. They love prepaid. They resonate with it. It's only come to certain elements in the market, and now we're bringing it into one of the biggest things in the market, right? So a car and the way you move around is quite core to the South African consumer.
Very quickly, how long have you guys been testing this out for as FlexClub?
So only in June, okay. Only since June.
Right.
So it's quite new. But just the traction that we've seen since June is something quite amazing to see. And we're hoping to replicate it. And, you know, like Tanasha was saying, you know, soon, hopefully by the time this comes out, also Avis will go out with their own proposition. So obviously a lot more, you know, brand visibility. And so this whole concept is going to become more and more and more known, we're quite bullish on it.
All right.
Can I just add a point? Because I think Idan made a critical point here, is that the psychology of control and how it's linked to pay-as-you-go, and maybe to some extent your case, that comparing Mudiwa, who when he first moved to Johannesburg, to Mudiwa now, a very established media personality, financially, economically, you could get a contract if you wanted to. The track record is there, but you prefer the control. And I think we've seen that also extend into other utility services. You know, even those high up on the economic spectrum have prepaid electricity in their homes. Why? It's control. So I think what we've seen now is like, this is not just about, you know, financial inclusion. That is definitely a core pillar. But 20% of the subscribers that have come to our network are people who already have vehicle finance, which is surprising, right? Like, they are coming to us to add a second car to their family, let's call it their family fleet, through a pay-as-you-go subscription. They obviously have the means why they're here. And I think we've now started to kind of lean into this idea that this is a product that has a very, you know, to use a political term, it has a wide tent. We could pitch a wide tent where many segments could be covered under this tent, not just those that have been excluded, the 70%, but even the 30% that do get approved are also responding well to the notion of pay-as-you-go mobility or pay-as-you-go cars, which is very, very exciting for us.
All right. Howard, you've been quiet.
These guys do the talking.
A couple of things for you, right?
Yeah.
Tanasha makes the distinction of a small business wanting to become big versus, you know, a startup. And usually what distinguishes startups is their technology, right? And a fortunate or unfortunate feature of technology in startups is that you tend to throw a lot of money, you know, at this technology. Can you talk to us firstly, what are you actually spending money on when it comes to the tech stack for FlexClub? You know, is it cloud? Is it AI? Is it developers? Like what exactly is it? And then the other piece is, I know that when it comes to these types of offerings, right, one of the questions that is asked on the other side of the table is the question around the integration, right? How is that integration happening? Obviously, you've got your secrets, but whatever you can share with us, is it an API? Is it you guys going in and maybe white labeling your platform, you know, internally for a client? Like, how does that stuff work?
Sure. So I think tech startups are maybe better defined by the pace at which they can innovate, right? I think Facebook made the term famous, what do they say? Break things, build things fast and break things, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's been a lot of our motivation, you know, Dan mentioned we went live with the prepaid in June. We relaunched the platform earlier in the year. And I think that's been a large part of our success is the pace at which we're able to innovate, the pace at which we're able to release these things has really enabled us in that sense. And I think that's what defines us as a startup. We're not incumbent. If we kind of see something's not working, we change it. If we see something is working, we double down on it. In terms of costs, I think, you know, the typical kind of cloud costs are there, of course. We do tend to flirt with a lot of AI services these days. Tinashe is big on AI in the group. But it's also like it's a really exciting space. I think just from a developer point of view, the amount of things that you can get done, part of that speed, I think, has been enhanced by AI. You know, some of the, you'll never kind of get rid of the human element because I think that's at the core where Tinashe has got the ideas or Idan's got an implementation aspect, and I need to figure out how to kind of translate that into tech. I think AI has been a huge accelerator in that respect. So not only do we break things faster, but we're able to break things faster because of AI, and that's helping us along the way. And I think in terms of our tech, we've started, like Idan mentioned, Flex Club is our billboard, and a lot of our tech has been built for the Flex Club brand. And as we're moving out onto these new partners that we're talking about, the Avis and the likes of other interested parties, we're building that out to be more scalable. So we are developing our API to be externally facing. We offer a host of options. We can white label on the one hand. On the other hand, we do have APIs that you could kind of build on top of. And I suppose it just depends on who our partner is and what exactly they're looking for. You know, on the one hand, you might have a smaller partner who doesn't have the technical capabilities and they would lean more on us. On the other hand, you might have somebody who's very well established and they have, you know, a whole set of security and rules and regulations that they want to kind of be driving that on their end. And we kind of support that whole broad spectrum.
How much of the DevOps are internal?
All of them.
All of them.
you're kind of looking at it. I think we're a very lean startup, and I think that's also testimony to our success. You know, you're looking at the three people in this room that have built this thing from the ground up in the short space of time and seen a lot of success. And I think that's really testimony, like I said, that partnership, that mix, that idea, that experience, that technology, it all comes together, and it's been working really well.
All right. Now, the reason I asked about DevOps is simply I was just going to ask, how are you finding getting talent in?
Right.
Because it's a competitive market. Absolutely. That's the other big money draw when it comes to
absolutely
when it comes to tech.
Absolutely, it's a good question. We're kind of only bridging that gap now as we're growing. You know, we've gotten to this point with the resources that we've had today. As we grow and as we bring more brands on and partners on, we're going to have to expand. So, I suppose watch the space, and maybe we can unpack that in another episode.
All right, and cool. I think just the last one for you, Howard, is just around this AI thing. Obviously, everyone is talking about AI. Everyone is inside it. Where do you see, I guess, the most value? Because AI is one of those things that can either be used internally, externally facing, or a little bit of both, because there is a Flex Club brand. Are you thinking about maybe using AI as part of the customer maybe interaction, that feedback loop, you know, around how people are enjoying the product, you know, maybe as a tool for, you know, perfecting the platform, or at least, you know, creating those efficiencies.
I think across the board. I think from AI assisting with the actual development of the code, all the way through to enhancing some of the manual archaic processes that we've had to bridge the gap on, and then obviously, you know, probably the more familiar cases of being assisted with customer support, as an example. You know, you have all of these AI chatbots, that stuff that we've been looking into. The nice thing is you don't necessarily have to reinvent the wheel. I think there's, with this wave of innovation going on around there, you know, let the AI experts figure out what they're good at solving for, and then, you know, look to leverage those solutions in your business would be my take. But
I was going to say, I think it's also quite timely, you know, the sort of evolution of AI and where capital markets have been the last 2 years for startups, in that investors are demanding capital efficiency. And, you know, I mean, I recall the beginning of this bear cycle. Like, you could argue we're still in that bear cycle. Maybe it's becoming a bit more bullish now. The questions we were asking, like, how do we actually uncover this efficiency, this operational efficiency we need? And now through AI, to Harry's point, like, all across all functions, that's where there's a massive opportunity. And I mean, that's what's exciting now. You know, made the point that we've kept this very lean. If I contrast this to, you know, how we built different versions of the Flex Club product in the past, what we've been able to do with the lean, you know, organization we have now versus then, there alone is already a 10x delta between our output and the size of our team. Like, that ratio of revenue per employee. And I think that's not, obviously, it's not unique to us. It's across every industry. And then that's the exciting piece. Every single week, I mentioned, I love it. I get energized by, you know, following folks talking about how they've uncovered a new breakthrough on unlocking operational efficiency with AI agents in different aspects, in different realms. It's an exciting time. It's an exciting time to be building. And I'm sure we're going to continue investing in bringing in more AI, you know, operational efficiency gains into the business.
Nice. I think where I'm going to end this off, I already told Howard that I've asked him his last question. So Idan, for you, I'm just going to, with the prepaid model, right, as opposed to the typical subscription model that was there in the past, how do you think it's going to shift people's mindsets around usury, right? Because I've spoken to some vehicle asset finance veterans, and when I ask them about subscriptions, they're like, listen, we've been trying since the 90s, developing, you know, usury models. As some people will know, your big automakers tend to have a finance arm in South Africa, where I think BMW, VW, I think Toyota, they all have a finance arm of some sort supported by the big banks. They're like, listen, we've been trying usury for a really long time, and it, for one reason or another, it just hasn't connected, right? So how do you think pay-as-you-go perhaps changes how, you know, this decades-long effort you know, to bring about a usury mindset, you know, will affect the market? Yeah.
So I think just on the subscription side, and then we'll go on to the prepaid side. So, I mean, Tinashe always alludes to it, that the rental companies are the best place to run a rental and subscription model. Why? Because the operational capacity that you need to run a subscription model for cars is, it's massive. And that's why we always shy away from the point of actually owning our own cars. And I'll give you an example. Let's say someone, you know, subscribes to a vehicle with us in Joburg. Now they've got, you know, they're going down to Cape Town in December. They break down in the middle of the N1. You actually need to have the operational capacity to go there, help them replace the car, service it, whatever it may be. So let's say like dealerships, for example, in Johannesburg, is just, it's hard for them to kind of have the scale to provide anyone in the country with a subscription product. And usually the way they would kind of like target it is by having like geographically like isolated like pockets to test it with. And you actually can't do that, because when it comes to cars, people want to cross over. You know, you've got family in Limpopo, you've got family in Cape Town, you're going to Durban in July. So you need to provide people with the freedom. And that's why Tinashe always says, like, the rental companies are the best place to run a long-term subscription product, even though their core focus is daily rentals, right? So taking that and us partnering with the rental companies gives us the footprint to service anyone in the country and able us to service much better than finance houses. Helps us to service customers much better than dealerships, much better than vehicle finance houses. And so we, by partnering up with the rental companies, that's already solved. So where they say that they've been trying to do it for very long, haven't been able to do, just by partnering up with rental companies, we already circumvent that whole kind of barrier to market, right? Now, when you talk about prepaid rather than postpaid, I think two things. So one, like Tinashe alluded to before, is the flexibility angle of the prepaid allows us to directly compete with vehicle finance, right? Allows us to directly compete with vehicle ownership. And we see the same thing in the real estate space. So people that can afford to buy a house or a flat opt to rent. Why? Because they might want the flexibility. Maybe in a couple of years, they might, you know, be expecting a baby or two, and they might need a bigger space. And just having that flexibility to upgrade, downgrade, you know, if they might want to go overseas, or they might want to opt out of their lease, whatever it may be. So that flexibility, I think we can really start taking away from the vehicle ownership space. Because a product that hasn't existed before. And again, for like I alluded to in the first part of this conversation, I see a massive financial inclusion play in this, because, you know, our product, we say that on our website, it's 100% approval, right? So as long as you have a driver's license, as long as you banked, so we can't help you if you're not banked. So as long as you banked and have a driver's license, you're able to access a world-class vehicle, you know. And since we partnered up with listed car rental entities, you know, the car is roadworthy, the car's top spec, it's a 2024 model. So it's not like we having these predatory products where we say, oh, you're blacklisted, you can't get access to vehicle finance, come to us and we'll give you an old vehicle and charge you exorbitant rates. We're saying everyone pays the same, everyone on the spectrum. So I think this prepaid unlocks two massive segments of the market. One is the high-end individual, such as yourself, that wants flexibility and control of his usership, which is a perfect product for. And customers that fall into that 70% rejection by the banks. So now we're offering them a product which before, up until, like if we were at Taiwan to May of this year, they would not have any options in the market, right? So now all of a sudden they've got an option that someone, you know, that everyone can access. And quite bullish on those two things when it comes to prepaid rather than postpaid.
Can I just make a small additional point there, is that on the network side of things, I think that's why it's an important sort of mental shift for everyone adjacent to the mobility market. And you mentioned the point that car manufacturers have struggled to, they may have tried, there are many in South Africa even that have tried a subscription model, is they don't inherently just don't have network-like infrastructure. When you think network, the next obvious question is coverage. You might remember like the decade that followed 1996 and beyond was, at the time, was two horses in the race. They'd all talk about their coverage. Who has the most coverage across the country? And Don just made a very important point, is that even if you are a car manufacturer, it's super expensive for you to build a network with massive coverage, especially one that you control. And that's why these guys are incredibly well-placed to do that. And I think if anyone is listening to the pod as a CEO of a major brand, I hope they take that away from this discussion, is that there is clearly a shift towards mobility being seen as a network, and that being a utility that's driven on a network. And if they're excited about that, that it's now easier to build a proposition on top of, you know, our technology that's unlocking new segments, you know, for that network. New brands can be built on top of that network. That's particularly exciting in my mind, to add to what Idan's mentioned around obviously expansion on the demand side, but also just the number of brands that could be proliferated as a result of this transition. It's very exciting.
Yeah, no, it's very exciting, and we'll be keen to see how, you know, things develop over time and the types of players that decide that they're going to come and want to build on top of this network. It's been very fascinating to see all of the different players, you know, if we're still using the telecoms example, that have begun an MVNO in the recent past. I think in the week that we are recording this, Old Mutual just announced an MVNO, and that is not a company I would typically have associated with it, because it's been typically the banks as opposed to the insurers and the retailers that have been doing this type of thing. So very keen to see from a subscription, from a car point of view rather, mobility, who is going to want to come in and do something on the prepaid side. Tinashe, we gave you the first word, we're giving you the last word. Two things. We are a finance platform, so at some point we have to talk about the rands and the nairas. So firstly, where are we in terms of profitability? Do you distinguish between the old Flex Club and the new Flex Club? And then, as we always ask startup founders, are you raising?
I think the last time you asked me that question in 2022, I said we're always raising. I think our mindset has certainly shifted around, you know, how we think about capital. We're fortunate to be in a position where we have shareholders that believe deeply in the vision. Like you said, you know, part of our job is to turn their dreams into their visions into reality, obviously informed by our own insights, and we're on the ground executing day to day. Look, I think from a capital perspective, the other thing that I think I take away from, let's call it this bear cycle, is in the tech space, at least the ideology is that, you know, startups should try to snap to the rule of 40. The rule of 40 being the combination of your growth rate and your margins. And maybe, you know, when the bull cycle was at its peak, startups were going too heavily on making up for the rule of 40 by maximizing growth rates. You know, growth at all costs mindsets, and, you know, we burn like there's no tomorrow because there'll be capital tomorrow. Where I think what we have now is a healthy mix that we're thinking very diligently about how to still meet the bar. You know, being in that cohort of businesses that subscribes to the rule of 40, it's obviously not a science, it's more an art. You know, we want to continue growing aggressively, but we also want to make sure that we're building a technology business that delivers technology margins. We don't want to be a technology-enabled fleet, as an example. So we're fortunate to be in a position where we're capitalized sufficiently, you know, for that. And I think now more than ever, it's very, very clear how this becomes a high-margin business. And not just attractive to shareholders in South Africa. We still have shareholders globally, but more and more attractive to shareholders in other parts of the world that recognize and value the innovation we're building here. That it's, this is not a South African innovation. You know, this is a platform that could deliver high margins in other territories around the world that would also resonate, have communities that also resonate with the pay-as-you-go proposition. So I hope that addresses it, at least at a high level, just how we think about capital now and how we think about profitability and the balance that we're constantly, you know, wrangling between maximizing margin and maximizing growth. We never want to do this at the expense of growth, because we are, at the end of the day, a startup. You know, the other ideological view is there's the rule of 40, there's T2, D3, which is you have to triple, triple, double, double, double to get to a point where you build a $100 million business. Very different expectation to, like I said, a small business trying to become a big business. And I think we still have to demonstrate how we can build, let's call it a 2 billion rand revenue business over a 5-year term. I think those things definitely, you know, keep us up, trying to constantly innovate, think through where else are there massive value levers. And there will come moments to the point around, are we raising? There will come moments where we need to go back to capital market and say, look, we're at this point in our journey, this milestone, to unlock the next milestone, we need more capital. And it's a very fluid conversation with both existing shareholders and prospective shareholders that are excited about what we're building here.
All right. So on that point, that's where we end off today's discussion. It has been a great one, just understanding what Flex Club is doing in terms of their business. You know, just talking to Tinashe, Howard and Idan just around what the new Flex Club, you know, looks like. I don't know whether we're calling this Flex Club 2.0 or, you know, something like that. But I think pay as you go is definitely the theme that we're walking away with the most. What's most interesting is that the overall thesis around the fact that people want to consume their mobility in a different way as opposed to traditional ownership, I think that thesis still remains, but I guess this is a refinement of that particular thesis to say perhaps we shouldn't be thinking about vehicle subscriptions from a postpaid or contract basis, but maybe there's a view around a prepaid model. You pay up front and then you have the ability to top up on top of that as a different paradigm. This is something that they've been, you know, working on and have put into the market since June, and they've actually been already seeing growth, relaunched the platform, but have clearly shown people that actually this is prepaid as opposed to postpaid. Also great just understanding, especially from someone like Idan, who has a lot of experience in the world of financing, and also just, I guess this is a discussion about risk at the end of the day, right? How much risk are you willing to take on versus the counterparty on the other side? And how do we, I guess, assure that a person is paying as opposed to hoping that they pay, you know, down the line, and balancing those particular things. And I guess for this particular market where you've been traditionally taken out of your normal scope of financial services, prepaid sort of balances that out, because you are still paying up front, but you have access to something that you wouldn't have had access to, and it helps you to de-risk you know, yourselves, and also the partnership with your rental companies also helps you from that point of view, in terms of having the network effect that you were explaining earlier on, and also the access to the scale. Because for startups, the scale conversation is always a tough one. You know, how do we get access to, you know, a bunch of people? Getting some thoughts from Howard as well, just around, I guess, how they're thinking around their technology investment. Their technology investment, how they're going to be integrating with customers that are coming in, balancing the internal Flex Club brand versus making sure that you build out your current platform, you know, to meet the scale when it does, you know, the scale demand when it does come, you know, down the road. And then I guess at the end, one of the things that's been great about this discussion, listening to Tinashe, is I think there's a book somewhere here that could be written. There's a lot of models. There's a lot of models that have been painted for us through the conversation, you know, just around how startups can be thinking about themselves, and also just, you know, the evolution, you know, whether it's a product, whether it's your leadership team, whether it's the talent, and whether it's your go-to-market strategy. And then lastly, you know, how you interact with the market. There's a lot to learn. You know, we hope to see Flex Club succeeding, you know, over time. We have had Zeta/Avis on this platform talking about this very topic in the past, and, you know, they've actually been bullish about, you know, a Flex Club. It would be good to also get them back on, you know, to understand where they are sitting when it comes to this particular discussion. So that's been it. We're in conversation with the team from Flex Club. Thank you so much to Tinashe. Thank you to Howard. Thank you to Ida.
Thank you.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.